Hello, I'm Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, and this is my podcast, Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes in the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy. But my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to learn more about this world and hear the stories of the other women, like me, the custodians of these great homes. So, in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes, learn incredible history, and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. So please do join me on my very special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to say thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA. For those who may not know, Circle DNA is a company that specializes in finding smarter, easier, and more effective solutions to your health by testing your DNA. Listeners, you know how much I love to learn about family history and lineage, and I found my Circle Premium results absolutely fascinating. I learned so much about myself, from my diet and nutrition, skin and fitness, to common diseases and cancer risks. Circle DNA believe there is not a one-size-fits-all approach to healthy living, and something I've learned from visiting all these different homes and meeting so many wonderful people along the way is that we all are so very different, with our own unique outlook and our own unique stories to tell. So developing your own unique approach to your personal health makes total sense. If you sign up to Circle DNA, you will receive your DNA testing kit in the post. Use the easy-to-follow testing instructions to self-swab at home. Send your completed swab to their laboratory for analysis, and within 3 weeks, you'll receive your results and personalized recommendations. You will also have the opportunity to book 2 complimentary consultations, one with a health coach and one with a genetic counsellor. To learn more about Circle DNA, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Dorset, the beautiful southern seaside county of England, known for its chalk downs and Jurassic coast, where ancient Roman ruins dot the lavish countryside, and where a house frequently referred to as the finest in all of Great Britain stands, Mapperton House and Gardens. On the exterior, Mapperton is a beautifully detailed Tudor home of amber stone flanked by rolling hills and rich, verdant gardens. But inside, the home really comes alive, with 4 different periods of exquisite and perfectly preserved interiors. Although the house now stands as a monument to the past aesthetic brilliance, Mapperton is a modern home in sensibilities. This owes much to the American chatelaine that guides it today, Julie Montague, the Viscountess of Hinchingbrook. The Montagues have lived at Mapperton House for the past 150 years and boast the historic earldom of Sandwich in their lineage. I was so excited to explore this splendid home and met Julie freely over Zoom to learn about her and their wonderful home. In the episode, Julie details how the Montagues invented the sandwich. I am taken through Mapperton's beautiful interiors and we discuss the rewilding projects that are so dear to Julie's heart. You are sitting in Mapperton House, surrounded with fabulous gardens in Dorset. Where exactly are you in Dorset?
So we're very close to Lyme Regis.
But by the sound of that wonderful tang you have in your voice, you haven't always lived on this little island.
I haven't. I mean, I have been here for a good 20 years now, but it's still there, that American accent. So I'm originally from Sugar Grove, Illinois, which is about an hour and a bit west of Chicago.
How did a girl like you, Julie, from Sugar Grove, Illinois, meet your wonderful Earl? Tell us the story.
I ended up over in London for a job and lo and behold, just happened by chance through mutual friends at a drinks party, met my future husband.
Goodness me. And did you have any idea who he was at that time?
No, I didn't. And 3 months into dating, I remember vividly him paying for something on his credit card and he pulled it out. And I'd always, you know, he was Luke Montague. That's what his name was. And he pulled out something that said Viscount Hinchingbrook. But of course, for me, I've never been immersed into this sort of aristocratic world ever before. The only royals or aristocrats that existed for me in my head was the royal family. So when he pulled out the credit card, I literally looked at him and said, "What? That's so weird. Why does your credit card say Viscount Hinchingbrook?" And he slightly looked at me in horror and he said, "It's Viscount." And I was like, "But why would it be Viscount? It's spelled exactly like discount." And I think that's what sealed the deal for him because he was like, "She's clueless. She has no idea about this part of the world." And I think for him, it was quite endearing because he had to literally sit me down for 45 minutes and tell me about his illustrious past and the Earl of Sandwich and really kind of how important his family was 400 years ago in the Restoration over here in England.
How did that make you feel as an all-time American girl?
I think for me, it was really wrapping my head around it, understanding that this world still really exists over here. You know, it's still to this day, 20 years on, I'm still learning so much, not only just about this family, but about Britain's extraordinary history. But I'm the first to admit that there are times that I still have to ask my husband if it's okay if I sit in this certain chair, because I'm worried that it's 300 or 400 years old. And if I sit in it, you know, am I going to somehow break it? As Americans, our history is so young and youthful compared to this 1,000-year-old history that England has.
However, Julie, did it take an all-time American girl like yourself to come in and grasp this heritage in the way that you have? What really prepared you in your upbringing that gave you this immense enthusiasm for what you've married into?
I think for Americans overall, many, many Americans, I should say, we do have this infatuation of England and Scotland and Wales and Ireland because we feel that this is kind of where we came from. You know, when you want to really look back on your family roots as an American, many, many lines are connected back to this extraordinary country. And I think we want to feel a part of it. So I think that's really where this love of this country comes from as an American.
So if I may now, I'd like to go into your lineage. So Mapperton House has had a long and very colourful history. It took a little bit of understanding for me, because it obviously hadn't always been in your family. And it hasn't always been part of the Earl of Sandwich's inheritance. Can you just go through that with us?
So the interesting thing about Mapperton House and its surrounding is it's a fairly new house in this family. It was actually bought in the 1950s by my husband's grandfather. So over 1,000 homes were either destroyed or left in ruin after the Second World War. And when the homeowners arrived after the Second World War, they found their houses in such a state that it was almost irreparable. And so in the 1950s, my husband's grandfather sold the family seat, Hinchingbrook, which was the family seat of the Montague family since the 1600s, which is in Cambridgeshire. And he ended up buying Mapperton House in the 1950s.
And did you move there with all your works of art, that wonderful painting that's behind you, all your collection of art?
Yeah, so Luke's grandfather moved the collection here to Mapperton, and it's been here ever since. So yes, behind me is one of the oldest paintings that we have, which is Lord Montague of Boughton. And he really is the founding father of not only the Earl of Sandwich line, but also the Montague family.
So how did the Earl of Sandwich become an earl?
Edward Montague, who became the first Earl of Sandwich, was a great naval officer. And in fact, he was the head of the Admiralty. And Charles I was executed. We had that period where Parliament was in charge and a monarch wasn't. And there was a secret plan hatched to bring Charles II back from exile. He was living in Holland. And that was devised with Edward Montague in mind, because he was this great naval officer, of going over to Holland on the secret mission, bring Charles II back to England, and then again, restore the crown. And so that was the period of restoration. And so Charles II was brought back by Edward Montague. On his return, King Charles II bestowed the title Earl of Sandwich to Edward Montague. And the reason it's Sandwich is because during that period in the 1600s, Sandwich, which is located in Kent here in England, was at that time a great naval port. And so Edward Montague wanted his earldom to take after a great naval port. And so he chose Sandwich. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history.
It certainly is. And while we're on the Earl of Sandwich, would you like to just remind us how something that we share across the British Isles, well, maybe across the world, is that famous thing called a sandwich? And we eat it every day, most people a few a day, and we never know really where the name has come from. Just tell us how that happened.
100 years later, the fourth Earl of Sandwich, again, was a fantastic politician and naval officer, head of the Admiralty. And the true story is that he worked so much that he was always at his desk with his papers, and he didn't want to get his papers greasy. And so his butler brought him his roast beef, but Lord Sandwich, the fourth Earl of Sandwich, asked for that roast beef to be put between two pieces of bread so he wouldn't get his papers greasy. And from that point on, after he asked for this obscure thing, roast beef in between two pieces of bread, the name Sandwich was clocked, and it took off quite quickly after that. So the sandwich that we eat today, our favorite snack.
Thank you, the Earl of Sandwich, the fourth Earl of Sandwich, John. What a great thing that he's brought to all our lives. So, Julie, how long have you actually been in Montague House living there?
Only for 4 years.
Gosh. So have you had a lot to do with the sort of fabrics and the curtains and the decorating? Or is that something that wasn't needing any guidance?
A lot of the curtains, when you walk through Mapperton, and the carpets in particular, as an American eye, you think, ooh, they're very run down and there's some holes throughout and there's some restoration needed. But remember, many of these curtains and carpets were brought from Hinchingbrook, and some of these date back to 300 to 400 years. And so the restoration, it's ongoing, as you know. So one of the things we did just do this year over lockdown was in the drawing room, we have an Aubusson rug, and Aubusson was around 17th century, and they were really made in Aubusson, France, and they were made for sort of nobility. So we have this extraordinary rug that has been walked on from the visitors coming in and out of the door, and it was in desperate need of repair. And so over a lockdown, we had Doris come in with her loom, and she spent, I think, 5 weeks here repairing the Aubusson because we didn't have any visitors. So that was an opportunity for us to look at some of the restorations and the fabrics in the house and look at what we can repair now before we reopen back up to the public.
Wow. Well done, you. I so remember arriving at Beaver all those years ago and coming into the corridors and seeing where the dog had cocked his leg. Well, many, many dogs up against pillars and curtains, and the stains were sort of gradually rising up the curtains. I was horrified, and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, we've got to sort that out. Only the other day, I walked down the corridor and I noticed that exactly the same was happening in my tenure. So it is an ongoing, and when you've done it once, you hope you'll never have to do it again, don't you? Because you only ever decorate once in your tenure. Yep. So you can't afford ever to make a mistake. It's such a joy to be with you today, and I'm so sorry that I'm not actually sitting in that room. But just tell our listeners about the room that you're sitting in and what you're surrounded by.
The room that I'm sitting in right now is the hall, and looking up above me is this extraordinary mantle with the date on it of 1604. So this is very early 17th century, the room that I'm in right now. Within this room, the hall, we've tried to create different elements of course, the architecture and the periods that it has, as well as the painting. So we've got the first Earl of Sandwich to my left, Edward Montagu, and he looks directly on across the room to his wife, Jemima Crewe, the first Countess of Sandwich. In the middle of them, we've got portrait of Catherine Braganza, who was the wife of King Charles II, and Edward Montagu actually went to Portugal to bring Catherine Braganza to England for Charles II. So we've tried to, within this room, show off, of course, the mantle and the extraordinary arts and crafts ceiling, but also make it very much a family room. So we actually do use this room, but we also like to think of it as this is the room where the Montagu family started. So we have all of the relations of the original founding members of the Montagu family in this very, very homely room.
Wow. And I love the way that you've collected them all together as groups, because one would feel that they're there together now as portraits, yep. Because they often are with you, these portraits, aren't they? They're sort of on your shoulder, keeping an eye on you, doing whatever we're doing our best to do in these homes. Just tell us a little bit about the design and style of the different periods of your home.
So what's extraordinary about Mapperton House is that there's really sort of three periods within it. So you've got the Tudor part of the house. We think it was built around the 1540s. And in the great chamber in particular of the house, it has the pendant ceiling, which if you've ever been to Hampton Court Palace, there is pretty much the exact same ceiling from the Tudor period at Hampton Court Palace. So we have this extraordinary pendant ceiling. Then, of course, we move to the Jacobean part of the house. Again, another period. And then we also have the Georgian part of the house. So there's a Georgian facade with Georgian windows that was erected, whereas the rest of the house has these lead windows around it. So you can really walk through this house and see the change of the periods in which they were built. Then around the 18th century, there was a passageway that was connected from the house to the church. So we actually have a church, All Saints Church, that the church tower is around 13th century, so 1200, so it's a medieval church tower. So obviously the church was here first before the home, but one of the families connected a passageway to the church. So when we go to church, we can just walk through the house and into the church. But of course, there is an outdoor entrance as well. And in fact, that is the church where I married my husband.
How wonderful. What impresses me so much about Julie is how she balances her modern principles and ideals while being so informed and in tune with the history of all that surrounds her. We always talk on this show about the challenge of bridging preservation and transformation, but Julie has managed to bring those two oppositional forces together so gracefully. This is a quick reminder that you're listening to Duchess, hosted by me, Emma Rutland, and this is a podcast produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. Coming up in the podcast, I discover what wild swimming is, and Julie opens up about the challenge of preserving her inner American while living a life devoted to heritage. Tell us about the projects that you have got on at this time in the house.
As you know, Emma, historic houses are known in one sense to have commercial shoots, so pheasant shooting. And one of the things that we've stopped is our commercial shoot. So I'm pretty veggie. So I've never really gotten into the whole shooting, and neither really has my husband, but we've completely stopped that. And instead we've taken back some of the land that was being used for the shoots, and we're starting to rewild. So our big project right now is rewilding. We've taken back some of the farms. We're starting to rewild. We've put White Park cattle within this rewilding project. And there's only about 1,000 White Park cattle across this country. That's it. And they're a very, very old species. I think they're about 1,000 years old. And they have beautiful horns. They're very docile and beautiful animals. And they will help with the rewilding project. We're also in the process of reintroducing beavers on the estate, which will help, we hope, with dams. But we're starting to do what we call these ecology tours. So once we took back the farm, so there's no grazing really that's happening to the extent that it was, you know, we've got these native orchids coming up, an extraordinary amount of beautiful wildflowers. And we're hoping that other species of birds will come back once we continue with this big rewilding project that we've just started about 6 months ago.
And so just for our listeners' benefit, will you tell them what really wilding is?
Yeah, rewilding, it's really giving back to nature. And if anybody's watched the latest David Attenborough program, My Life on This Planet, one of the takeaways from that was when he said, how can we help the climate change that's happening, the world that we live in, and how can we get it back to that better place that it needs to be at? And poignantly, he said, we must rewild the world. And we very much took that to heart and decided to, of course, give this back to nature. And in one sense, we're trying, just as in our little way that we can here, to revive it. And that revitalization can only help humans because we are a part of that chain. We come from this planet that has given us this extraordinary life. And we feel very passionately that we must work together with nature and not against it. And that's our plan for rewilding, yes.
I think what you're touching on is a very key point. Because what you're talking about is not just being a custodian of the house, but also of the landscape that surrounds it. And one of the reasons may be that we have these little iconic bits of England left as they've always been is because of aristocracy and families who kept the land together. So there hasn't been the rape and pillage of villages for planning. You know, the villages are kept in that chocolate box way that people love to come and see them on old-fashioned estates. And in your case, that's a big step because, of course, you're taking the land back to how it would have been 300-400 years ago. I still wonder how we're going to eat with really wilding, but that's me. That's my farming background coming in.
You know, and it is a tricky one. It's looking at, I think, other ways, and we're all being educated now in a way that we've never really seen before. It's looking at other ways to make sure that the land is sustainable for the future.
We do have, I truly believe, a sort of revolution going on in the countryside as we speak. And I think more than ever, this moment in time is about change in our countryside. And may I say, there's another part to your business as well. As a yoga teacher, is that right?
I've been teaching yoga for 15 years now. I mean, that is really my love as far as careers go. And sometimes I do yoga in the drawing room and I look up above and I see the 4th Earl of Sandwich looking down at me. And I think he must be thinking, what is going on? Who is this woman? And what is she doing yoga in a 500-year-old Tudor part of the house? But I think it's adapting and making things work.
So meditation?
Absolutely. So meditation, and I'm very into wild swimming. So we have an extraordinary 18th century pool out back, almost the size of an Olympic sized pool. It's natural. And one of the things that I did over lockdown was really immerse myself 2 to 3 minutes every single day into that freezing cold English water. And I've become a real wild swimmer. Every time I'm down at Mapperton, I do it every single morning before the visitors arrive.
So. When are you actually, what are your times for being open to the public?
We have been able to open up the gardens when the government allowed, I think it was April 12th. And we are just about to open up the house once again, the first time really in 2 years, if you like.
And has that had an effect on your revenue streams through the lockdown period?
I mean, absolutely. Historic houses like ours rely on weddings. Little by little, hopefully the visitor income will be coming back. But of course, we lost all visitor income during the pandemic and we lost, you know, the wedding income, cafe. But we We've really reinvented ourselves here at Mapperton, and we've been able to create through YouTube and through a platform called Mapperton Live, which is really a streaming TV platform, a subscription service. So people can watch us week in and week out on all of the various projects. And I think for us, that's been a lot of work, but also another revenue stream in order to help to support this part of England's heritage. And we're able to then produce this so that people who can't travel now and may not be able to even travel as frequently as before the pandemic, we want to be able to show what happens and what goes on into the upkeep of England's heritage.
Well done, you. Well, I hope all those lovely ladies I'm listening to are listening to you, Julie, but I think you're an inspiration to all us old cronies. Very, very powerful. So Mapperton House is rather unusual in that it passed down through the female line for four generations. Could you tell us a bit about how this came to be?
That is the extraordinary thing about Mapperton House, and especially during that period, you know, to be passed down by the female line over and over again is really quite unheard of. But I think for me, the woman that stood out the most, one of the most extraordinary women, was actually who we bought the house from, Mrs. Labouchere. And in the 1920s, she is the one who really did transform this house. So she put in arts and crafts ceilings around the house. They're beautiful, but also I think extraordinary gardens, sunken gardens, the Italianate gardens, 15 acres, and they're very formal, and that's not seen very much. You would think of these formal, extraordinary Italianate gardens to be behind some palace or some very, very grand castle. So to have a manor house, to have these extraordinary gardens is quite unique, and Mrs. Labouchere designed them. Over 7 years it took her to create these formal gardens from 1920 to 1927. And the reason that she really had a hand in creating these gardens is because she was an artist. So on either side of the Italianate gardens, there are two grottos. And within these grottos are fireplaces. And she would come out. And as you know, Emma, it's freezing cold here in England most of the time. And she would light her fire, put her easel up. And those were her two very special places to paint, to draw. And that was the garden that she wanted to create over 7 years so that she would have a place to really tap into her creativity. And so Ethel Labouchere is really the woman that I look up to, in the sense that the creativity and the passion that she had around Mapperton in creating it into a home that she wanted to live in, but also to live outside in the gardens, to get back to nature. So when I look at Mrs. Labouchere and the Italianate gardens that she created, getting herself back in nature, it brings me back to, of course, what we're trying to do here, as we talked about, with the rewilding within the estate, but going back to that nature. And she's really my inspiration for that.
So she's on your shoulder looking out for you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Do you feel that you have been supported in your role at Mapperton, or have you come up against obstacles?
I have had really no pushback, which has been wonderful for me. So I have been really supported by my mother-in-law in particular, a huge support of mine, my father-in-law, massive support of mine. So they have very, very much embraced my American ways, because that's the other thing I don't want to give up, and I would never give up, is the American in me. So I have not changed my accent or really changed who I am and the way that I grew up. In fact, I've been able to bring that into the house. So of course we have Thanksgiving every single year, and my in-laws love that they get invited to celebrate Thanksgiving. That means they get turkey basically twice within a month, Thanksgiving and then of course Christmas. And we do in a sense very much celebrate the 4th of July. I send my children when they were younger, you know, 4th of July cupcakes to school, and they really embraced that American in me. And I think the family I married into are very proud of the fact that I am American, which is really a wonderful and a huge support.
That's amazing. And you don't feel you've had to in any way change how you are to fit into how the system works. But what would your advice be to any American, all-time American girl marrying into the institution in this country? Because sometimes it's not all that it appears from the wrapper.
Well, I would say most of the time it's probably not all that it appears from the wrapper. But my whole thing is stay true to yourself. and do and implement the things as an American that you would like to implement. Also embrace the history, embrace the differences. And ultimately, it's your happiness that's the most important. And for me, I am very, very happy marrying into this family. I'm very happy the history that comes with this family. I'm very happy to learn new things, but also very happy to put my American stamp on it. But happiness, of course, is the most important.
It has been a joy to see that all-time American happiness ringing through on this screen today. And well done, Julie, for everything you're doing for British heritage, and keep flying the American flag over Mapperton Hall.
I definitely will. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. If I may, sitting with you today, watching you in this extraordinary slice of British heritage, what would you say, Julie, to six generations before you that may have lived in that house?
To say to them that very much we are the generation that's trying to keep their history and their stories alive. Who better to tell the stories about them than us, the people who basically learned from them and was able to really dig deeper into how they survived here, what happened here. But it's an ongoing storytelling. The stories don't stop. You know, we continue to learn so much more, and then we're able to tell these stories about the first Earl, or about, you know, the female line of Mapperton House that was passed over four generations over and over again. And I think this is really important, especially now. For me in particular, as an American, I don't want history to get lost. I think history is an opportunity for us to learn from. And that is important for us to take that history and to learn from it, but certainly to make sure that it doesn't get lost.
That's amazing. And likewise, what would you say to your great, 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 great grandson and granddaughter sitting there today who may take on Mapperton House, whether it be a boy or a girl?
We hope one day that it will be a girl, but I'm certain that the female line will continue to play its part. But for me personally, I do hope that they continue to do yoga and use every single room to do their downward facing dog, to do their meditation, and they continue with that well-being part of their life, because I think that's very, very important for our mental health and for our emotional health, as well as obviously physical and energetic health. So I think for me, I would hope that a few generations from now, the yoga that I have sort of created in this 500-year-old home continues to evolve.
That's so nice.
Closing note, the Viscountess of Hinchinbrook ended our conversation on emphasizing the importance of prioritizing one of one's own mental health and happiness speaks volumes on her character. She is a woman who's managed to blend an appreciation and commitment to heritage with an appreciation and commitment to modernity. Mapperton House is not just a home that embodies the past, but I think with Julie as a custodian, it is home that embodies the future as well. Thank you so much, Julie, for joining me on the podcast today, for sharing your front-facing affirmative outlook on life, and of course, your beautiful home, Mapperton House and Gardens. And thank all to you for listening. Next week, we have a very special episode in the history of this podcast. As we leave Great Britain and go international, I will be speaking to Catherine Fitzgerald of Glyn Castle in Ireland. In the episode, Catherine relays some of the remarkable and amusing legends associated with her family. We catch a glimpse of the many ghosts of Glyn, and Catherine walks us through the wild, magical gardens she has cultivated at her home. I'd also just like to thank once again our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA, for supporting the podcast. If you want to learn more about the great work Circle DNA do and make a real investment into your health, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Now it's time once again for our listener inbox. Today, Daria writes to us, the message reads, "Your Grace, good day to you. I'm cutting straight to the chase. I'm excited to hear about some fascinating castles and more ghost stories. I've never seen anybody step out of the wardrobe, but I think I'd be petrified and deeply shocked. Nevertheless, I really want to hear more about things like this because I find the evidence of afterlife fascinating. And even though it's chilling, the depth of mystery is breathtaking. If you ever travel to Ireland, I think a castle called Glynn would be a marvellous place to hear about. The podcast is so brilliantly executed. I cannot wait for more. Daria, thanks so very much for your email and for listening to the show. Well, Daria, I think that's a marvellous idea. And I also think you should tune in next week. You will be very happy with this episode. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.